Next up, we tackle some of your neuroscience questions. I join Professor Simon Laughlin from Cambridge University, who's been flexing his brain power to answer your questions about the brain. First up, Sean Hoskins got in touch via Facebook, asking, can you burn off a hot fudge sundae by doing a difficult maths problem instead of hitting the treadmill?
The answer is definitely no. So when Lowry and Keaty first measured the oxygen consumption of the human brain, the second experiment that they did was to test whether the brain was like a muscle, that if you worked it harder, it had to use more energy. And so they got people to sit down and solve difficult math problems and measured their energy consumption of the brain. And what they found was that there was no detectable change. So doing difficult math problems will certainly not enable you to lose weight. The best thing you can use your brain for is to design a good exercise regime and a diet.
Brilliant. Thank you, Simon. So I suppose I should be hitting the treadmill then in order to shed those Christmas pounds. Next question in from Etienne Musto, wondering, is it true that we only use 10% of our brains? And if so, why? What happens to the remaining 90% of our brain?
The answer to this question is really contained in the answer to the last question, that your brain is ticking over all of the time. And when you actually engage in a specific task, you do something specific, a small part of the brain that's concerned with doing that task becomes more active, starts signalling more vigorously to process the information that's needed to solve that problem or to stop you falling over or whatever. And that is why, because it's a small fraction that gets switched into action to do something specific, that's why people could not measure a big change in energy consumption when the brain engaged actively in some specific mental work. Of course, what this means is that there are large parts of your brain which are just ticking over, and they're sitting there ready to engage in something when they need to. So you might ask the question, well, could I in fact have more of these parts of the brain switched on and do incredible multitasking? And the answer is no. When these small regions of the brain become more active to do a specific piece of mental work, their signalling rates go up by a factor of about 10. And some work that David Atwell and I did a few years ago, Dave is professor of neuroscience at UCL in London, work that we did a few years ago shows that if you were to increase the activity of these of every neuron in the brain tenfold, then your brain would be using more energy per second, per gram of brain, than an Olympic sprinter making a world record attempt.
So in that case, is it true that you can only use 10% of your brain by concentrating on one particular task at any time? Or do you think you could recruit maybe 25, 50% of your brain to be much more energetically active and engaged in many different tasks? Or has your brain somehow got some capacity to stop that from happening?
Well, it mainly comes from the capacity is really inbuilt into the architecture of the brain. That the architecture of the brain is that it's not a general purpose computer that uses a small set of circuits to do everything. It's a specialized computer which has a specific set of circuits for every task. And because of that, then it's able to deal with everything, but only a small fraction of the brain's circuits will be engaged in that at any one time.
And this really leads us on to the final question. Kevin Hoover has been in touch again via Facebook, saying, how does the brain interpret all the information that's coming in through its senses? So, for example, tactile information transmitted from his extremities, such as hot, cold, smooth and coarse, etc. And he's also asking, is the information encoded in some fashion or routed to different places depending on the sensation?
The reason that you're able to detect hot and cold and touch and so on and tell the difference between those different types of energy which are impinging on the surface of your body is that in your skin you have sensory receptor cells which are sensitive specifically to heating, specifically to cooling, to particular types of touch, fast sharp shocks, deep stretches and so on. And so those sensory receptors in the periphery already sort out the different types of stimulus that are impinging on your skin. And each one of those sensory receptors sends an axon, a wire, to the brain, and it sends it to a part of the brain that's specifically concerned with hot or cold or with different types of touch. So the information is being what we call in neuroscience line labeled. If you're sitting in the brain, you see an electrical signal coming along a particular line, and you know that that line comes from a receptor which only responds when the temperature of the skin goes up, then you know that an increase in the signaling, electrical signals coming in, means that that part of the skin is getting warmer. So how is this information encoded? The answer is that it's encoded by electrical pulses. So they're very brief, rapid up and down changes of electrical potential that last for 1/1000th of a second. Now, it's tempting to say that these are digital, because a digital computer also works by making pulse electrical pulses, which switch from being down, which is zero, to up, which is being one. But in fact, the brain is not a digital computer. It's not processing information using digital logic. These pulses are coding the strength of the stimuli, how intense they are, by the frequency with which they occur, i.e. how many pulses are there per second. And when the rate of pulses per second goes up, the brain generally interprets this as the intensity of the stimulus becoming stronger.
That was Professor Simon Laughlin from Cambridge University, taking on your questions about energy in the brain. And if you've got any burning questions about your brain and the nervous system, just email them to neuroscience@thenakedscientists.com. You can tweet at Naked Neuroscience, or you can post on our Facebook page, and we'll do our best to answer them for you. That's all for now. I'll be back again next month with a Valentine's love special. We'll be finding out if love is the drug. We'll be probing romance, discovering the brain rush during courtship, sex, pleasure, monogamy, and we'll be trying to get to the bottom of promiscuity. This Naked Neuroscience podcast has been brought to you in association with the Wellcome Trust and in partnership with the British Neuroscience Association. See you next month to open our minds.